Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with the Hola Hoax. You know there were no gas chambers in Germany and that Hitler did not want to exterminate the Jews. The Jews were part of an international communist group who wanted to dominate the world, which meant that they had to exterminate the white race. So it's actually whites that are being exterminated. And 6 million did not die. In fact, nobody died in the gas chambers except the victims of typhoid fever because they were filthy in the east of Europe and they brought all these fleas in with them. That's why they had the Germans had to shave their heads and they walked around bald. They were, of course, very skeletal and emaciated because, in fact, the Allies carpet bombed Germany and prevented the food trucks from getting into the camps. But actually, the Jews and the Germans has been completely misrepresented to you, and the misrepresentation goes on and on by the United States media promoting this Ariel Sharon mass murderer, when in fact Arafat is a much more honorable man. I am promoting abortion today because I know it's a subject of great debate and great discouragement between the sexes in the white race. The men and the women need to come together and understand each other's point of view. I maintain that a lady has no need to destroy her life by the unexpected advent of some snail-sized fetus that gets into her body any which way if it's not what she wants to invest her life in. Then when it's time, she and only she will decide when she has the resources, the energy, and the money to take care of the baby. I talked tonight about Hitler. What a nice man he was, how we have totally misunderstood him, and how the Jews have taken over the Catholic Church, just as Hitler said, during his time, leaving really the only island of sanity being the Protestant Church, hence the term WASP, for good white people. That's WASP, and it stands for White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you like what I have to say. I think Arafat is doing the right thing by refusing to stop attacks against the Israelis as long as they have invaded and still occupy Palestine. After all, it's a case of clear burglary. You don't make peace with the burglar until he leaves your home. So I think it's a very strong proposal that this new prime minister, I forgot his name, the one that was appointed by Arafat, has said that not only are they not going to stop shooting the occupiers, the invaders, until they go back into their own side of the partition plan, but the Palestinians are now correctly demanding that they be allowed to return to the Israel side of the partition plan. After all, Israel was based on the understanding that David Ben-Gurion would not expel the resident Palestinians, but he did. Using torture and force and terrorism, David Ben-Gurion drove off 700,000 Palestinians from the Israeli side of the partition plan before he commenced to invade the Palestinian side of the partition plan. So the Palestinians are entirely correct. They are not going to stop fighting back until the Israelis go back to their own side. And furthermore, they want their right of return recognized so they can go back and continue living where they had been living on the Israeli side of the partition plan for thousands of years.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it.
Why would you suggest that the Lebanese are bad people? Where do you get that idea? It's the Israelis that have broken every contract they had with the United Nations in order to take land they have no right to. They lied about the gas chambers. They lied about Hitler wanting to exterminate them. These lies were used as a cover-up to keep from the American public the truth about the Russian Revolution, which really was exterminating the white race. And then they lied and said it was the Jews that were being exterminated, which was just a lie. They, based on this lie, they got the United Nations to give them Israel, predicated on the term that they would stay within the limits of their side of the partition plan, and that they would not expand into greater Israel. But we have records from David Ben-Gurion that prove that he had no intention of being honest and standing by his commitment to allow the resident Palestinians to live on the Israeli side of the partition plan and not expand. Instead, David Ben-Gurion expelled 700,000 Palestinians off of the Israeli side and then mooched on over and took all of the Palestinian side, stole the Golan Heights from Syria, stole southern Lebanon from Lebanon. Fortunately, the Hezbollah drove them back into Israel out of southern Lebanon, and now they've got a stranglehold on the American public, and they've convinced us to go and hit their arch enemy, Iraq, whom we have no beef with whatsoever, so that they can have greater Israel that will extend all of the way from Egypt to Iraq. Now we're told, after they caused us to commit a violent criminal act against Iraq, they're going to hit Lebanon. I think America needs to stand up. I think the white man needs to tell the Jew that this is the 91st country he is to be kicked out of after he exhibits his despicable criminal tendency. Being in the minority is simply not a problem for whites. Who cares if we're in the minority as long as we have each other? The point is that we are waking up to the fact that we are no longer in the majority, and we have to exercise more will to stay with each other. But that's okay. It's fun to be white. The reward is you get to be with other white people, and we don't really care about the other races. The other races want to call us mean haters because we have fun together. So what? We don't care. It's better for one white person to be with three other white people than to be without three other white people, and that's basically our choice now. Without our noticing it, we've been separated from each other so much that we rarely get a chance to have three or four white people sitting around the same table at one time without any non-whites around. So it doesn't matter if there's 1 million or 2 million or 6 million or 2 billion or four. Four people is four times better than it was before we woke up to the fact that we're being separated from each other. All white people want to do is celebrate other white people, and we don't have any hostility or concern for the non-whites, except that they leave us alone. Adolf Hitler made that extremely clear in his dissertation on white separatism. He said, "I am not a white supremacist. I do not promote the theory that the white race is superior. What I promote is that white people are happier if they stay with only white people. I, Adolf Hitler said, am a white separatist." And I truly believe it drives the other races crazy because they wish they were white. They wish they could enjoy the intellectual relationships that we enjoy with each other. They wish they could have dinner with, you know, a friend and not have to talk and yap and have castanets and boomboxes, but they can't. They just can't. And that's just tough. Well, it's not a lie. I'm not telling a lie when I say that a perfectly fine, young, idealistic concert pianist was murdered in a black neighborhood by blacks to pay him back for daring to try to spread the light of Western civilization into their dark, crime-infested, drug-infested, stupid world. This man was guilty of believing that black people could care. This man was guilty of believing that political correctness would protect him when a gang of black thugs decided to kill him, as they have in Africa since time immemorial. This man was guilty of stupidity, idealism, and he paid the ultimate price. He died by torture at the hands of a bunch of black, savage, Negro beasts. That happened. The horror of the story is that the neighbors were not told. We were lied to in order to protect the feelings of the black race. We were told that he was a homosexual, that he was guilty of being a homosexual, and that he was rightfully killed by homosexuals with whom he had encountered in a sexual encounter, which was not true. He was playing one of the many concerts that he played, and he went into a neighborhood of Negroes, and they killed him. The horror of the story is that whites are not allowed to know the truth, and so they continue to go into black neighborhoods, and they continue to play concerts, and they continue to be murdered. I am calling for a stop to the stupidity. I am saying that white people need to tell white people that black people are dangerous, and we need to stop going in their neighborhoods, and we need to stop caring, and we need to understand they do not care for us, and call for a separation of the races, because we do not have the duty to expose ourselves to murder just in order to be politically correct. That's going too far. The reason that intelligent, wealthy women have more abortions is because they're intelligent enough to know how to get the abortion and are wealthy enough to pay for it. That's the only connection there. Women have always, throughout history, exercised their power to abort their unwanted fetuses because women want the best for their children. And women are the only ones who can decide what's best for their children. No one else cares as much as the mother what's going to happen to her children. She knows if she has enough resources to give it what she wants her child to have. Nobody else can look from the outside in and determine for that mother what the style of life should be for her child. Some women don't want a child to be born in poverty. They'd rather wait and have the child born in wealth, especially if they were born wealthy. The idea that it harms the child is fallacious, because we don't know what the child wants. When we're talking about a fetus the size of a snail, does it have any desires? Does it have any aspirations? On the other hand, we can assume that a child that's born has normal aspirations for education, clothing, shelter, a husband, a father, stability. These are the things that mothers want to give their children that unmarried men have no understanding of. That's why throughout history, when a mother was giving birth to her 18th child after seeing six of her child starve to death in ancient situations, she often took it upon herself to murder the recently born child rather than to add to the misery of herself, her family, and the newcomer. These are moral decisions with many variables, and the only one who should be trusted, or really can be trusted with a decision, is the mother. She's the only one who knows what's probably going to happen in her life, and she's the only one who should be allowed to make the decision for her own baby. Maybe that baby is better off not being born into a life of poverty. Maybe that baby has a handicap that a doctor might say, well, the baby can survive this handicap. It will have to be on tubes all of its life. It will be in intractable pain all of its life. It will never be able to see because it's a victim of chemical poisoning, like the babies that were born in Iraq after we bombed Iraq in the first Gulf War with this depleted uranium, and the babies were born that looked like little sacks of baby parts wrapped up in mucus bags. Those babies were born, and if the religious right had their way, those babies would have to roll around for the rest of their life until they finally died of exposure. But few women would want to give birth to those babies. The discussion was about abortion, as I remember, and my position is that I'm for abortion and that women should have the right to choose whether or not they should have an abortion, because only the woman has the knowledge of what's right for the baby. Whether or not you agree with me is the only thing that's relevant in the discussion, not my personality and not my popularity. If you disagree that you think the woman and only the woman with the assistance of her doctor, should make the decision for her unborn baby, I'd like to hear your arguments against my position, because I think they're so weak that you have to fall into the pit of personal attack, since you really have no arguments. So you have to descend into the level of a non-human and use foul talk, personal attacks, and anything except a cogent argument, because there really are none. The woman, and only the woman and her doctor, is in a position to determine what's best for her unborn child. In many cases, that choice is that the child should not be born, for the benefit of the already born children and future children. If abortion is murder, then any woman who has an abortion should be executed. And I don't think that's a reasonable position. Historically, it's never been accepted. The punishment for feticide has never been as high as the punishment for homicide, because throughout history we've always known intuitively that it's different. To kill an unborn baby is not the same as killing a live-born baby. They are different. The difference is the difference in investment. First, there is no investment in the child except that made by the mother's own body. And that's one of the reasons that the mother, and only the mother, should decide if she wants to continue the investment. She is not going to want to do that if the baby is going to be born severely handicapped and doomed to a life of severe intractable pain, possibly having their life extended with heroic medical means, being kept on tubes with blood possibly being pumped through its heart 24 hours a day. A mother might not want that for her child and might choose death for it, instead of dooming it to such a destiny. Continuing on with that argument, there might be many other reasons that a mother might determine that it's not appropriate to have her child at this time, and poverty is certainly one of the factors she would consider. To argue against that on the basis that a woman who would kill her unborn baby is not a mother isn't an argument. It's just a personal attack on the mother's character. The only argument that would make sense would be an argument that would argue that the baby's interests are better served by being allowed to live. And I maintain that in many circumstances it's not to the baby's best interest, but that only the mother can make the determination as to what's for the baby's best interests, because only the mother cares enough to take the baby's best interests in mind. The priests of the church of radical riotous religionism don't care how much pain the baby suffers. They're looking at tomes of religious writings and trying to make sense out of them. They don't have the heart and the soul to take into consideration what's best for the baby. They're thinking in terms of hypotheticals and just theories and ideas, especially these strange theories like God will send you to hell if you murder your baby. Well, that's not known to be a fact. In fact, in ancient Hebraic law, if you look at Numbers 5:27, you'll see that there was a time when abortion was mandated, and that's when if a husband thought that his wife had been illegitimate, was giving birth to an illegitimate baby, in Numbers 5:27 it describes the man taking his wife to the priest and the mother's given an abortificant, and the husband is relieved of the responsibility of bringing up this bastard child, this illegitimate child, because it's always been understood that the best way to ruin a man's life is to saddle them with children that aren't his, especially if he can't afford them. Even if their children are his, without using proper birth control, you can destroy a man's life, you can destroy the family, you can destroy the society by giving a man too many children to raise. What about the fact that if you determine that abortion is murder, you're going to have to execute all of the women who have abortions? Is that really what you think is the way to treat your women? Especially when you know that from the beginning of time, possibly before humans were even human, while they were still Neanderthals, women have been using their powers, their medicine powers, with the help usually of other women, but sometimes with the help of men, to get rid of children before they're born so that the family life will not be destroyed. Do you think these women should be executed? Do you think they should be hung or shot or given lethal injections? That's the argument you're going to have to support if you're going to determine that abortion is murder. You're going to have to punish the women as if they were murderers. And first-degree murder is punishable by death. That is the worst treatment of women that we've ever had. In no time in history have women been treated with such lack of respect. They've never been dehumanized to the point where they were murdered, or let's say executed, just because they exercised their power of choice over when and whether they would give birth to their own children. But remember, that's what you're going to have to support if you say abortion is murder. You're going to have to execute all of these women. If you decide to make abortion murder, and then of course you have to execute all of the women who have abortions, I guess the next step would be to make it a punishable crime or proof of insanity to support the idea of a woman having the right to abortion. Isn't that right? Oh, well, shall we make it proof of insanity, supporting abortion, or shall we make it a crime? And if it's a crime, then I suppose that supporting abortion would be sort of being an accessory to murder, and then we should execute the women who support abortion as well. Isn't that correct? There is no support for the idea of executing women who have abortions. There is no reasonable, rational basis for stigmatizing a woman as a murderess for having an abortion. All you can do is descend into vile talk, attack her womanhood, say she's not a good person, not a good mother, and that she should be killed. But you can't come up with a reason as to why she should be executed. You can't think it through because it doesn't work. Abortion is not murder. It is feticide. The killing of a fetus is entirely different from the killing of a human being. Basically, because it hasn't got the rights of a person. Under the Constitution of the United States, persons are entitled to the pursuit of life, liberty, and property, not unborn persons. These fetuses do not have constitutional rights. Those rights are had by the mother. And only if the mother wants to invest those rights on her child, or actually her fetus, because that's all it is before it becomes a child, does that child have any rights. That fetus, that embryo, the size of a snail in the first trimester, by the way, with a very undeveloped nervous system, does not have any rights except those given to it by its mother, and that's what nature has dictated. You can't change that. You can legislate against it, but if you do, and you go against nature and say that the woman's rights are equal to or less than those of the embryo, the size of a snail, which she has produced, then you are forced, through logic, to execute this woman who decides to get rid of that embryo, the size of a snail, no matter what her reasons. And many, usually, the reason is that the embryo is forming badly, that the child, if it is born, will not be able to have a decent life, which is why most mothers have abortions. They look into their little crystal ball of motherhood and say, this baby's not going to be happy. I don't want to have this baby because I want my children to be happy. I would rather put off having this child, and I will wait until my circumstances are better, and then I'll give birth to another embryo, which I will carry to term, and then it will turn into a fetus, and then it will turn into a baby, and then it will be a person, and everybody will be happy. I will have a husband who loves me and who's equipped to take care of my family. The children will be educated and sheltered until they're married, and then they too can produce children, and life will go on. But unless you give the woman that right, you're going to have to execute all of these potential mothers simply because they exercise their natural power of choice. Are you really ready to do that? Let's look at the question of abortion from the point of view of the society. That's what we really need to figure out. Is it better or worse for society to have every embryo brought to term, made into a person, given the rights to to pursue life, liberty, and property, and then become a fully vested citizen? Can we afford to take care of the burgeoning population that's basically being foisted upon us by people too uneducated and lacking in enough money to abort the children that they're not prepared to take care of? Do we want that for our society? I don't think so, especially since the doubling rate of the human population has gone from 1,000 years in the time of Christ to only 30 years. What used to take 1,000 years for the human population to go from, I think it was 1 million to 2 million. It took 1,000 years. No, I'm sorry, I did that wrong. It took 1,000 years for the human population to go from 1 billion to 2 billion. 1,000 years to go from 1 billion to 2 billion. Now, in 2001, it takes 30 years to go from 6 billion to 12 billion. Do you see the difference? What used to take a long, long time to accelerate is accelerating at astronomical levels because the human population doubles in a geometric progression with an exponent of 2. That means that it is not doesn't double at an arithmetic progression, which would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It doubles in a geometric progression with an exponent of 2, which means it goes 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, etc. And then it goes 2 billion, 4 billion, 8 billion, 16 billion. This is called an exponential equation with a geometric equation with an exponent of 2, commonly known as a J curve, because on a chart it starts going very slowly higher and higher, and then suddenly it goes very fast higher and higher, so that on the chart it looks like a J. We are presently at the height, at the top of a J curve on this progression of human population, and if we don't stop, we're all going to die. So clearly it's not in the interest of society to continue having children at an unregulated rate. Abortion is one of the tools in the arsenal of humans' bag of tricks to keep ourselves alive. It's time for our massive brains to control our massive sex drives. It's time to control the birth rate. So you see, it is in the public interest to have abortion, and it's a very frightening subject because we're facing annihilation of the entire planet, including all animal and plant life, if we don't control our numbers. But we can do it. We can do it if we survive and if we stay cool and if we keep our sense of humor. It just means having a vigorous birth control campaign and giving up the idea of wars and famines and plagues as being unacceptable and completely inefficient means of controlling the human population. In other words, they don't work. And isn't that nice? Isn't it nice to know that we don't have to fall prey to the historical means of controlling our numbers, these unethical means of murder and bloodshed and war and famines and plagues? We just don't have to. All we have to do is be human, use our massive brains to figure out technologies to control our birth rate, and go about the business of living more and more successful and affluent lives. Nothing could be more fun. The idea that it's spewing hate and ignorance and stupidity to question the intelligence of a president who can't pronounce nuclear is just silly. We have to question the judgment of a president who can't pronounce nuclear. Nobody's saying that President Bush is a genius who's devised a conspiracy to destroy America. What we're saying is that someone has designed a conspiracy to destroy America, and that President Bush is not intelligent enough to keep that group under control. And we want to know who that group is. That's not spewing hatred and ignorance. That's reason. It would be unreasonable to do anything else after 9/11. It's like looking at the sunset and saying, the sun is going down. Any fool can see that something happened. Michael Chertoff was appointed the head of the Homeland Security Commission. And what was his, what were his first three official acts? First, he gave safe passage to three cells of Israeli spies, one of them 200 strong. Two, he put in jail Matt Hale, David Duke, and a couple of other vocal white supremacists who have been pointing the finger at the government, saying the government is no longer serving the descendants of the founding fathers, and it looks like the Jews are in control of America. These men who have been saying that are all in jail right now, thanks to Michael Chertoff. And then the third thing Michael Chertoff did was come up with this silly nonsense about anthrax, which kept the attention of the media for 10 days and nights, 24 hours, 7 days a week, that had nothing to do with the investigation of 9/11. And now all of the investigation of 9/11, pathetic as it is, has been permanently sealed, and our president is fighting Congress to not let it ever become public knowledge. That's enough to start asking questions. Anybody who has taken a look at what happened after 9/11 can't fail to see that machinery went into action, as if the thing had been anticipated. Maybe not by the local people, maybe not even by President Bush, but somebody knew something like 9/11 was going to happen and were ready to take over the Middle East. Who would that somebody be? It would be somebody smart enough to put this plan into place for 100 years. Somebody with the power, somebody with the intelligence to react to the invention of the automobile, which took place in 1889. In 1889, oil became important to the international corporate community. And somebody decided they had to take over the Middle East to get a hold of that oil. Somebody who was big enough and had long enough view into the future and enough money to implement a plan for world domination, which they implemented in the form of communism. In 1919, 20 years after the invention of the automobile, the Russian Tsar was assassinated by Zionists, and 65 million white Christians were killed. In 1919, the Balfour Declaration was drafted, which promised international Jewry that they could have Israel. And in 1919, Britain defeated the Ottoman Empire and took over the Middle East. I think these events are connected. I think international Jewry decided it would be a good thing to take over the Middle East to get control of the oil. And in order to do that, they would have to take over the world. And in order to do that, they would have to exterminate the white race. Everything we've seen since then has been geared toward this outcome, including leaving the borders open in America and all of the other white Christian countries, so that all of the white Christian countries would be inundated by an advancing horde of non-whites, which would breed the white race out of existence. That was one of the ways to destroy the white race. The next was to actually murder them in massive numbers. For example, by getting whites to fight whites in the Second World War. Get Hitler to fight the Russians. The final death count of white people who died in the Second World War was 100 million. That was a good chunk out of the white race. Now we're seeing America being used by international Jewry to make the final cut in the plan. Deliver Iraq up to Israel. We're seeing it happen. They're already appointing Jews to take over the administration of Iraq. Syria will follow. Lebanon will follow. And ultimately, America will be wasted and Israel will dominate the world. So Israel thinks. It is my opinion that white people will wake up, we will put a stop to this nonsense, and we will kick the Jews back into the corner for the 91st time in history that they've almost taken over a country and have been kicked out of it. Surely nobody disputes that oil is very important. Can't I trust that as a premise for my argument? I think oil is behind everything here. Let's look at when oil became important. It hasn't always been important. Oil didn't become the most important issue in the world until the automobile was invented in 1889. And within 21 years, people started putting into place a way to get control of the Middle East. In 1919, England had defeated the Ottoman Empire and thought that she already controlled the Middle East. But England found out the Middle East was not so easy to control, and the whole thing fell into chaos. Now, some interesting things happened in that time of history when the leisure class had time to sit around and figure out what to do about the oil. How can we get the oil? We have to control the entire Middle East. That means we have to control the world. How are we going to do it? We have to have a plan. First, they came up with the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. I'm sure you've heard of it and you don't know what it means. But what it is it's a fake document, but it purports to be an ancient document of Jewish origin that describes how Jews are supposed to treat non-Jews. And yes, they're supposed to exterminate non-Jews, and they're supposed to take over the world. There are to be no borders, intermarriage is to be promoted, illegitimacy is to be promoted, homosexualism is to be promoted. We're going to create sort of a hodgepodge of powerless people with no internal integrity, and we're going to turn them into slaves, goyim, cattle. Well, they didn't think that was going to work, so then they constructed another plan that lifted all of the phrases, all of the planks, and they called it the Communist Manifesto. And that worked. People got behind the Communist Manifesto. The Jews got behind the Communist Manifesto, and so they instituted the idea of worldwide communism. The point I'm trying to make is that all of this was just a scam, a means to an end, which was to get a hold of the Middle Eastern oil, which had suddenly become so important that it altered everybody's worldview. Suddenly it was obvious that whoever controlled oil was going to live richer than anyone had ever lived in all history. They could suddenly have a 6 billion member slave class and a 1 million member superclass. They would call it communism. The Communist Party leaders would live like kings, and everyone else would be so cowed and controlled and subdued that they would be content serving the state instead of their God, because God would become a problem. If anybody went into a closet and started praying, the whole thing would not work anymore, because they'd wake up suddenly to the fact that this isn't any fun. So they had to take God out of the picture, dump the nuclear family, promote homosexuality, get rid of national boundaries, and create one world state, one world race, one world nation. The reason Clinton is hated is because he's not controllable. He's too smart and he's too strong. He wouldn't just cave in like a burned out cocaine freak whose all of the instincts of the cocaine addict are aggressive. If you've ever seen any cocaine addicts, they're extremely aggressive. That's why cocaine is used so much in the business world. The cocaine addicts, the young men in their 30s, come raging into the office, and they just rage about their business, and they're strong and aggressive, and it works for about 10 years, and then they just fall apart, and they retire, usually, because they've got all of their ducks are in a row, and they've got huge pensions ready, or they're ready to go on a gigantic disability insurance plan. They know what they're doing. But if you go into cultures where cocaine is used, you'll notice the aggressiveness of the people. It's a very aggressive type of drug. just the opposite of marijuana, which makes you very passive and laid back. So what you have in Bush is a burned out ex-cocaine addict, and he's got all of his instincts are geared toward aggression, but his brain is impaired. So he's perfect for somebody who's trying to create a war. He loves the fight, and he hasn't got any capacity for saying no to anybody who has control of him. He's being controlled by the Israeli Jews who want to start World War IV so that they can destroy America, waste America, turn America into toilet paper and throw it down the toilet, because the Jews are embarrassed by America. America was started by the founding fathers, real nice people with intellects and culture and museums and churches and castles, all the things white people build kind of get connected to America and Europe. And the Jews don't like those things. And because they are an inferior race, if you even will consider rating races, then you will see that the race that builds mud huts and doesn't have a wheel or a written language probably is lower on the ladder of success than the race who's building castles, museums, and churches. So if you're willing to accept that there's a continuum, and only an idiot doesn't, you'll have to understand that the Jews are not anywhere near the top. They're even lower than the Sumerians and the Medes, whose ancient artifacts they just zealously and delightedly threw to the ground and destroyed, these jealous Jews. They're completely crazy. That's why they've been driven out of 90 countries. But now they're in control. They've got Bush. He's controllable, and he's doing what they want him to do by playing into his religious psychosis, convincing him that he's a messenger for God. They use him to start World War IV, which is going to deplete America and turn the Middle East over to Israel. Well, Hitler made it very clear that the Catholic Church had been infiltrated by Jews, and that is true. The writers of the Malleus Maleficarum, which was used throughout four centuries to persecute witches, was written by two Jews, one named Yaakov Sprengler and the other named Wilhelm Kramer, with a K. Yaakov and Kramer were two Jews that were hired by Pope Innocent VIII to draft this instruction manual, which was handed out to all of the Catholic priests to be used to torture to death witches. And a million people were murdered through the use of this book, through the use of torture. These people that were tortured as witches and burned at the stake, that numbered a million, were tortured by priests using the instruction manual, which was written by these two 15th century Jews in 1450-ish. Hitler said that the Jews had taken over the entire Catholic Church, and he pointed to the influence of St. Paul, which in fact is far greater than the influence of Jesus Christ, and the two influences are completely opposite. Jesus taught that life is to be lived. You should be a strong individual. You should use your reason. Don't be illegalistic. Don't worry too much about the laws. But on the other hand, you must obey the law. Paul says just the opposite. You don't have to obey the law, but you must buy into this false persona religion, I think is what they call it, when you worship a person, which Jesus specifically said he was not the Son of God, he would not be named king, and you were not supposed to worship him. You were supposed to worship God and recognize that he, Jesus, was no different from his fellow men. St. Paul turned it into a personality cult and said you had to get on your knees, say these certain prayers, worship Jesus Christ as a God, and then you didn't have to obey the law. But on the other hand, we have a whole bunch of new laws that you have to obey, which are basically superstitious, and if you don't obey them, in the name of Jesus Christ, we will torture you to death. At that time, hell was invented, and Hitler taught that all of these strange inventions were Jewish in origin, going back to ancient Jewish culture, which did promote torture, which did promote terrorism and fear, and did demonstrate by their own writings that when the king got mad, he would take a whole city full of people and make them walk through ovens until they were dead. The Jews are a barbaric, terroristic culture. They got their hooks into Christianity, and we're seeing the results today in the form of all these Christians running around saying that the Jews are God's chosen people and America should be shit-canned in favor of Israel. To say that I hate Jews, nothing could be farther from the truth. I've tried to demonstrate that the people who are attempting to take over the world, the communists, the Jewish Bolsheviks, are not Jews at all. It's a silly game that's being played by people in power who needed a vehicle to convince the world to let them take over, starting with the creation of Israel. These people in Israel are not Jews. Jews look like Yasser Arafat. They're Semitic. They share genetic material with the Arabs. They are the same. It's the same race. Jews and Arabs are the same genetic strain. The people in Israel are a hybrid of Turkish Asiatics, known as Khazar Jews, and Europeans with whom they've assiduously intermarried in order to make themselves look white. They're a strange group of people who call themselves Jews in order to convince the world that they are the chosen people and that they should be given Israel, which they will then extend to Greater Israel, which they're now doing by taking over the Middle East, which they will then extend into the world. The plot was created when the automobile was invented and oil became important, and this group of rather nasty people saw a way to take over the world by taking over the Middle East, by controlling the oil, which could then make everyone in the world into this sort of primitive slave state, which is what these lower races love. Just look at Africa, look at Arabia, and you'll see what I'm talking about. They have these giant kings, and then all these poor people that worship the kings. These are not what white people create. White people create egalitarian societies. These are not Jews, but they are non-white, and they hate the white race, and they've declared war on the white race, and they're trying to exterminate the white race, which will, of course, be the end of the civilization which the white man created, which is the Western civilization, with castles, museums, churches, Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms, etc. So it's not that I hate the Jews, because these are not Jews at all. I love my own race. I'm just trying to point out that this Jewish thing is not Jewish at all. It's a plot on the part of certain international bankers, certain international rich people, to take advantage of the sudden importance of Middle Eastern oil so that they can jockey themselves into becoming the kings of the world, because they're weird people. They want to control the world. It's a sicko philosophy. Normal, healthy people don't want to control the world. They just want to live in their little cities, in their little houses, and take their little mops out every morning like Europeans do, put on their blue dresses, their white smocks, and wash their windows and go home to their husbands. That's what healthy, normal people want. These guys are not like that. They're not content to just be part of a thriving society. They've got to be on top. They've got to have 6 billion people under them kissing their ass, and that's why we have to put a stop to it. We cannot allow people to take over the world and make slaves of us all. It's unthinkable, and I promise you, the white man is not going to let it happen. So let's review. In 1899, the automobile was invented, making oil suddenly extremely important. Oil, it was obvious now, would be the lifeblood of Western civilization. In 1919, the Balfour Declaration was drafted, which was to create Israel. In 1917, Jewish Bolsheviks assassinated the white Christian Tsar and went about the business of assassinating the entire upper class of Russia, which came to 65 million white Christian Russians. Soon thereafter, it became obvious that the white race had to be exterminated if a world government of slaves was going to be implemented. The white race, which had created castles, churches, and museums, Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms, was not likely to be made into a slave state and would cause trouble. Trouble erupted in the form of Adolf Hitler, who withdrew from the World Bank, which was controlled by Jewish Rothschild, and said, "We don't need your gold standard. We'll just get along without you." At that point, Franklin Roosevelt realized that he, a Jew, Roosevelt, would have to put Hitler down. So a trick was devised in which Hitler made a deal with his enemy, his arch enemy, the communists in Russia, that he would settle for half of Poland if they would take the other half. No sooner had Hitler taken his half of Poland, but that the Allied nations declared war on Hitler, not concerning themselves even slightly with the fact that Russia took the other half of Poland. Hitler had a contract out on him, because Hitler, alone in history, stood up against the communists. The rest is the history you all know, written by the communists, with one exception. What you don't know is that the gas chambers, the 6 million figure, Hitler's supposed contract out on the Jewish race to assassinate and exterminate them was completely a lie. Extracted under torture from the 122 prison guards that were captured at the end of the Second World War. Now, why would communist Russia and the Allies get together and make this incredible lie and present it to you? What did they get out of it? Why would the entire world be brainwashed into believing that there were gas chambers when there were not? That the Jews were the persecuted victims when, in fact, they were the oppressor, the perpetrator? Why would they lie like that? Well, I'll tell you why. It was a twofold reason. Number one, to aid in the extermination of the white race, which was the worst threat to world communism of any of the races, because it's the most creative. And two, to make the whole world bow down and worship the messianic, victimized, saint-like, humanitarian Jew. Of course, by this time, there were no real Jews. The real Jews had been kicked out of Russia in 70 AD and had basically race-mixed into oblivion. This new creature, this supposed Jew, was just something concocted out of whole cloth to give the world something to worship so that they could take over Israel, wipe out the Arabs, take over the Middle East, and then take over the world. What we saw in 9/11 was one step in that plan, and our President Bush was a willing victim. Doped out on cocaine as he was, he had no instincts left except aggressive ones, and he had no brain left because of the attack on his frontal lobe that had been done by all the cocaine he had been taking. So what we have in Bush is a mad, stupid warrior, that bloodthirsty warrior who has nothing motivating him except a hopeless hope that God will forgive him, which God won't, and so he listens to God's voice and does what God tells him to do. Of course, God doesn't talk to deranged cocaine addicts, so the Jews are filling in, and Bush is doing what the Jews are telling him to do. What's nice about Hitler? Well, for one thing, he was on to the Catholics. He told people that the Catholics had been taken over by Jews as early as 1450, which is absolutely true. These two Jews wrote the Malleus Maleficarum, which was used to torture witches throughout the Dark Ages. One of them's name was Yakov Sprengler. Of course, history has changed his name first from Jacob and then to James, but Yakov is his real name. That's the one that shows up on the first edition of this book of instructions as to how to torture witches to death. And his co-author was named Wilhelm Kramer with a K. Well, Hitler was on to this, so he made the Catholics stop molesting their children, and if they wouldn't, he put them in solitary confinement, basically for life. He really hated that church, the Catholic Church, and he set up an umbrella organization called the Reich Church, R-E-I-C-H Church, which was an umbrella organization that combined and got cooperation out of the 27 Protestant churches that were flourishing in Germany at that time. Hitler, indeed, was a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. What a joy! Well, as Americans, we're not allowed to not care. We are one of the combatants. We are bankrolling Israel. We are accessories to the murder of the Palestinians. You can't sit back and watch it like a football game because you're out on the field, whether you know it or not. And we have to turn around and go back into the locker room and say, piss on Israel. We're not going to be a part of this crime against humanity. What can Israel do for us except possibly use their illegally manufactured nuclear weapons, which they made against their agreement with the United States using American money? Why would we want them to use nuclear weapons on our behalf? We have enough money to buy oil. We don't have to be mafioso and hold nuclear weapons above the heads of the Arabs and say, sell us your oil at discount prices or we're going to kill you. That's not the kind of people the descendants of the founding fathers are. That's what Jews do. That's not what white people do. We're willing to buy and sell in the open market, honestly, and above board. We don't have to use terror tactics. So what does Israel offer to us except give us a bad reputation with the very people, our fellow traders, the Arabs, that we want to have a good reputation with? We don't want the Arabs to see us as mafioso. We want to see us as peace-loving, trustworthy merchants. They have a product. We have money. What's the problem? You think we're saving money by bombing the guts out of Iraq and Afghanistan to turn them over to Israel? Do you really believe that we're going to get oil at such a discount that it's worth the price we're paying? Or do you agree with me, which is that this war has nothing to do with America's best interests, that the reason America's borders are not being armed, which could be easily done for $2 billion, is that our government would rather spend $100 billion turning the Middle East over to Israel and shit-can America, turn America into a third-world piece of toilet paper and run her right down the toilet, as long as Israel survives. That's what this war is about. Israel has nothing to give us. We are married to a cunt. We've got to stand up using the masculine principle that the communists try to convince us is evil. Stand up to this little vicious bitch and say we're not going to be her bully boys anymore. Somehow she got a hold of America's balls, but American's masculine youth is going to have to stand up, put his hands over his penis, and tell that bitch to get her claws off. The white Anglo-Saxon Protestant is the light of the world, and our founding fathers were WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. They're the most intelligent, they come from the best background, the highest culture, and they had a lot to do with Europe's museums, castles, and churches, not to mention Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, etc. The Jews claim that they've been here since the beginning of our country, and in fact, they're right. They were here before we even had our Constitution drafted. You know what they were doing? They were torturing us. They were utilizing the instructions in the Malleus Maleficarum to torture women, white women, to death and burn them at the stake. If they gave them involuntary erections, which was considered a crime by these Jews, who wanted to turn the Massachusetts Bay Colony into a state whose national religion was Hebrew. Now, the Malleus Maleficarum was written in 1450, approximately, by two Jews, one named Yakov Sprengler and one named Wilhelm Kramer, with a K. They were asked to do this by Pope Innocent VIII, who had many illegitimate children and had a little sex problem, so he got these Jews to write this instruction manual for the torturers of witches, and then disseminated it throughout the Catholic community, which was used to kill at least 1 million of our people. That's what the Jews were doing in 1650 when they came to America and went about the business of torturing and burning witches. Thank you, Jews, but I really think your time is up and you need to leave this country. Just consider this the 91st country that you tried to take over and were kicked out of. Well, it's true that we're pretty badly mixed up. There are three great races, the white, the yellow, and the black. And God made it that way, and God wanted it to stay that way, but we have committed the sin of adulterating the races. We have committed the original sin of race mixing. Remember, Cain was not a product of Adam and Eve. Cain, the murderer, was a product of Eve and the Nasech, Negro witch doctor. And out of that sad union, that mixed union, came the mongrel Cain, who God cursed. And that was only one of many examples in the Bible where God has cursed the children of mixed marriages. All you have to do is look around you and you see all these Klingon-type monsters being born to parents of different races. And look at yourself. Do you tend to be a little overweight? Are you a little dark? Are your eyes brown instead of blue, but the rest of you looks good? Well, there's a nigger in the woodpile. I'm sorry to tell you that. Or at least a Jew. Or maybe you're lucky and it's an Arab or a Chinese person, but very few of us are pure. That doesn't mean we can't unmix. And unmix we must if we're going to achieve greatness. We want to revitalize the white race and make it so that we are again what we were 800,000 years ago. All of us with the right face, tall, slender, blue-eyed blondes. The people that created the museums, churches, and castles in Europe, the people that constructed the pyramids in Egypt, the people who created the beauty and the grandeur that was Greece and the glory that was Rome. These are our ancestors, and they were more pure of blood than we are. But that doesn't mean we can't go back and make wise, rational choices instead of watching the white race walk off the stage of humanity. What a tragedy that would be. The life of an upper-class married white woman is hardly the life of tribal woman. The upper-class white woman has a wonderful life. She falls in love with her white male and is delighted to spend time with him every day. It's not work to get up and make breakfast for somebody you love, and it sure is fun when he comes home at night and you get to put your head over his head and give him a kiss on his forehead and a little hug, knowing he likes it. It's not just sex. It's a genuine attraction between a man and a woman who get along, share values, and enjoy talking to each other. Sometimes they have dinner and they don't even bother talking. They just like to be together. But of course, when the children come, there's so much to do. You have to take care of the children, dress them, make sure they're properly disciplined and trained, educate them, and it works out very nicely, but slavery, hardly. The upper-class white man's life is nothing but a slave, nothing like a slave. She has servants of her own, and yet she has a lot of things she does all day. She has to look good. That's part of her role. So it takes time to dress and put on makeup and take care of your husband and make sure he looks well. You don't maybe have to actually do the laundry, but you do have to make sure that all the clothes are there and that they match. Not a life of slavery, no. That's a life of almost leisure. Except for the fact that, of course, white women, like white men, seem to be compulsive at working all day long. It just doesn't seem like work, because it's so much fun to be with other white people, namely your husband and your children. It's a question of teamwork. What kind of a team player are you? When you're doing something with a team and one team member says, do that, do you do it or do you stop and say, wait a minute, you can't talk to me like that. You can't tell me what to do. Because if that's the kind of team player you are, your team isn't going very far.
That's all for tonight, folks. I hope you liked this evening's edition of the Hola Hoax. Tune in again next week, same time, same station. Thanks again for listening, and good night.